Start the podcast. It was always burning since the world's been turning.
This is We Didn't Start the Podcast, an album-by-album rewatch of Billy Joel's increasingly Billy Joel-sounding career.
I'm Adam Ragusea. I don't really like Billy Joel.
I'm Meg Donahue, and I really do. Here in episode two, we're going to talk about the first official Billy Joel solo album, Cold Stone Harbor.
Did I seriously write Cold Stone Harbor in the
you
script?
Did.
It's cold. What is it? It's cold.
Cold
harbor sound. Cold sound. Cold spring harbor.
Cold spring harbor.
Cold spring harbor. Okay.
Listen, man, I just read what's on the script. I just show up.
As discussed in last episode, I always think of this album as being Cold Stone Harbor in my mind because there's just something about it that sounds like ice cream sold in a strip mall. Like
something mass produced.
Yes. So Cold Spring Harbor. Cold Spring Harbor is the album that we're going to talk about. And this is, as you said, the first official Billy Joel album. Let's listen to how Billy Joel remembers this record. This is about a minute clip that's from some DVD extra that he did at some point. I don't know. It's in the picture. It's old, fat, sad Billy Joel. So he's got boats behind him.
I wrote this album not as a singer-songwriter, but as a songwriter. I was thinking of other people doing this. The material on this album. But the advice I got from people in the music business was, well, if you want people to hear your songs, make an album. And then you go out on the road and you do shows and you promote your album. I thought this is a strange way to be a songwriter. But it just so coincided with the era of the singer-songwriter. And that's where my career went. Like I said, I didn't really want to be a rock star when I was doing this. I wanted to be a writer. This album really didn't get distributed very well. It was on a different label originally. It was recorded at the wrong speed. I know they remastered it, but I still sound like a chipmunk to me. So, you know, you have to pay a lot of attention to this one. But it is in the set. And it's the embryonic Billy Joel, I suppose.
All right, well, we will scrutinize several of those claims in just a moment. But first, this album came out November 1st, 1971. Meg, remind us what else happened in 1971.
The Allman Brothers played their legendary concert at the Fillmore East. The album would later be inflicted on every high schooler who ever went to a party, ever.
At least in the South. I didn't get that in Pennsylvania. Just letting you know.
Oh, you missed out,
friends.
Don't
universalize your experience.
You missed out.
All right, let's see. What else? Fat, sad era Jim Morrison was found dead in a bathtub in Paris at 27. Little did 22-year-old Billy Joel know at the time that his own fat, sad era would last well into 2016 and probably beyond.
Greenpeace is formed in Vancouver. Giving guys you thought were hot, but turned into self-important assholes, volunteer opportunities to brag about for years to come.
And Disney World opened in Orlando, though Epcot Long Island remains under construction. Florida's Division of Alcoholic Beverages is looking askance at the mouse-eared bottles of red to be offered at BJ's Italian restaurant.
1971, solid year for Joel.
Solid year for Joel.
So, Adam, we heard from the clip that this album had some mastering problems. I'm not someone who comes from a technical background when it comes to music. What does that mean?
So mastering is the final stage of record production where the songs that have been recorded and mixed, meaning like all the different instruments have been balanced against each other and blah, 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 blah. Like the songs are done, but then they all have to be kind of put onto the same single recording. And there's some sort of processing that happens at that stage to make it all sound like it's part of the same album. And then back in this era, in 1971, you're talking about doing that entirely on analog tape. And what Billy Joel claims is that the record company that he had signed with was run by this idiot, what's it called, Family Recordings?
Family Productions.
Family Productions, okay. And this is, by the way, the guy from Family Productions is the person to whom Billy Joel, just before making this album, had signed a record deal that was like he signed away the rights to all of his songs for 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. That was some kind of Faustian deal with the devil there.
It reminds me of that that John Mulaney joke.
I was like, oh man, you're going to give me a whole $100 for all of my songs? Where do I sign, Mr. Berry Gordy?
So by the way, the whole thing that Billy Joel was saying about how like he didn't actually want to be a singer-songwriter. He was just trying to be a songwriter. Mm. This is reason number one why I am skeptical of that claim. Because if your plan was to be a songwriter, why would you sign away the publishing rights to all of your songs?
Good point.
Thank
Good
you.
Point.
Okay, for 10 years.
For 10 years.
Or, 10, which... or was it 10 albums? Something like that. Anywho, where were we? Okay, so the idiot at Family Recordings, right?
I think his name is Artie Fripp. I'm pretty sure it was something, you know, like a carnival barker's name.
Artie, you really messed up my record.
Artie, come on.
Artie, you messed up the record.
Sound like a chipmunk, Artie.
Artie apparently in the mastering stage had the tape machine set to being a little bit too fast. And when analog tape rolls by too fast, the pitch goes up, right? So let's listen. So people on YouTube do have what they claim to be the original pressing. So here is what should be the original pressing of the first song on this album, She's Got Away.
She's got a way about her. I don't know what it is, but I know that I can't live without her. She's got a way of pleasing.
All right.
So he kind of does sound like a castrati. I mean...
Well, don't judge. Okay, so here's the remastered version. It was after Billy Joel became a big star, they fixed the record, right? And reissued it. So keep that key in your head from the original, and now here's the fixed version.
She's got a way about her. I don't know what it is, but I know that I can't live without her. She's got a way of pleasing.
So you can hear the difference.
You can, but it still sounds, it doesn't quite sound like Billy.
No, yet. He still sounds very, his voice is, what do you call it, tremulous?
Right, he sounds like just on the verge of manhood. just on the verge.
There's a few hairs in certain places, but not that many.
He's got a crush on his math teacher. He's going to write a song about it. He knows she's in her 20s and he's only 12, but it could work. It could work. She's got a
way. It's so earnest, right?
It's so earnest, and I think that's why I love it. I think I love the 1971 recording because it's so earnest. Walking
anywhere. One cymbal. The drummer gets one cymbal in the whole song.
Got a paycheck for that. She comes to me when I'm feeling down, inspires me. Without a sound, she touches me, and I get turned around. Oh, come on. How can you not love that?
I don't like any of this. What are you talking about? That's the whole premise of my function on this show.
It's so good.
Okay, so I wanna play that same spot, the bridge, the little middle eighth there, as it is represented in the Songs in the Attic album, which is the live album that came out 1981, I think. And so this is Billy Joel 10 years later, right?
Right.
And he's now a man.
Yep.
Right? And
graduated
and,
from high school. That's
right. Got a little more hair.
Got a little more hair.
Hey, he's got chest hair on the album cover. Do you see that?
And he would like to show it off.
He sure would like to show it off. Okay. So here's that same middle eight part being performed live 10 years later.
She comes to me when I'm feeling down, inspires me. Without a sound, she touches me. I get turned around.
Oh. Right. So.
All three versions, I love them.
You do?
I do. I love them.
I actually could be sold on this last version. Because really, I mean, in all seriousness, like the way he sings that lyric, 10 years later, it really sounds like the boy's become a man. And the song, which started out as being just saccharine, earnest, and just sickly, as dirty now. It's like,
right.
she touches me. Yeah. You know where she's touching me. You know?
I've seen some shit, man.
Exactly. He's like, you know, he's been around a little bit. Yep. And that's a man singing that song.
That
now.
Is, in that third version, you can kind of hear the whole thing with Artie Fripp and
all the pain.
Divorce and all the pain. And yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, it is traumatic when you steal your drummer's wife.
But they ended up being super best friends, he and the guys still.
He and the guys?
Yeah. It took a while,
well,
but they got back together.
According to Billy's telling of the story, maybe we should get John Small on the show. See how he feels.
Hey, Small. Remember when your bestie stole your girl?
So, you know, the problem with...
you're cool with that, right?
The problem with doing this podcast the way we're doing it, where we're going to Beyonce it, like the whole thing is going to come out at once, right, is that we can't build a fan base over time and therefore have leverage with which to get John Small on the show.
Right, yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's like the guys on my Star Trek podcast that I like, The Greatest Generation. So they make fun of this actor who Biff Yeager. He played the engineer.
Yes!
He played an engineer on on three episodes of the first season.
He's the baddest guy in the frat. Biff Yeager.
But yeah, like they just made fun of him, and then like, and because you know people were listening to the podcast, now like Biff has like written into the show, and I friended Biff Yeager on, no, I followed him on Twitter, and he gave me a DM back that was just like, "Thank you very much. Please look at my children's books that I'm."
I don't like your children's book, Biff.
That's
all. Dance for me.
That's always what people who like had like a flash of fame earlier in their life, what they end up doing later is they have children's books.
Right.
So John Small from Attila. Attira!
Attira!
John Small's probably a children's book author.
Because why the hell not? He's got a lot of stories from a Long Island childhood.
Right, yeah.
By John Small.
Where do you think that he lives?
Oh, gosh. I hope he lives in the most obscure... wooded.
Yeah, I think he's gotten out of Long Island. I think he's in Maine or something.
Really?
I think he's
a Long Islander for life.
Really?
I think he's a Long Islander for life. I think that is his niche. He can't understand anything outside of it.
Okay. Those Attila royalties are probably substantial enough that he can live in the Hamptons or something.
I mean, just rolling in.
Yeah. He's probably he's probably asleep under the boardwalk at Jones Beach right now with a freaking
needle in his arm. there's a dog just licking his face. He doesn't care.
All right, John Small, we're very sorry. We know you're probably very successful somewhere. Please don't sue us.
As long as anyone can mock but can, she's looking for a downtown man. That's what I am. I'm a and when she knows what she wants, from her tie, I am.
What were we talking about? We were talking about She's Got Away.
Yes. Right,
okay, so I want to go back to the mastering thing again, which, by the way, here, there's a good demonstration I can do of like the mastering thing. So I'm going to play the original version and the remastered version on top of each other.
Ooh.
Okay, so here's original. Here's remastered. It's going to be...
It's like, Jesus, it got dark.
Art. I'm making art. Give me an A. It's art. I am skeptical that this was like a mastering mistake.
Do you think this was the 1971, they actually wanted to make him sound like a chipmunk?
So there's a very famous story of when Brian Wilson was making Pet Sounds, Beach Boys Pet Sounds, and he did a song on there, a beautiful song called Caroline No. And it was going to be a single, and it was going to be actually released as like a Brian Wilson solo single. And his father, Murray, who was still this like controlling force in his life at the time, apparently mastered the song like a half step high because he wanted Brian to sound younger because he was supposed to be this kind of teen idol sort of character.
Oh, that's an interesting
angle. And the thing is, by the way, even though Murray was an asshole, that version of Caroline No sounds way better than the original. Like, he was right. The key was too low in the original. So what I'm wondering is, did, what's his name?
Artie Fripp.
Artie.
I'm pretty sure it's Artie Fripp. I may have just like pulled that name out of the air. Well, which just sounds like a shady producer name. Artie Fripp.
This is not the kind of podcast where we're going to fact check anything, okay? If you're looking for the authoritative Joelcast, I'm sure there probably is something called authoritative Joelcast somewhere, okay?
This is just our half-thought-out ideas.
So Artie, I think Artie might have sped it up intentionally to make him sound a little bit more like a teenager.
That would make sense.
For marketability.
Yeah.
There was also things that you would have to do sometimes in the vinyl era. Like if you had too much music to spread over one side of an LP, there would be technical problems. The grooves would be too close.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes that was a reason why sometimes records would get mastered a little fast, is to actually make them shorter to fit onto the side of the LP.
That's a fun fact.
I don't know if that's what happened here, because this isn't a super long album, but I think we've already probably thought about this for too long.
We can't think
is,
about this
I don't
enough.
Believe anything about this. I don't believe that Billy Joel just wanted to be a songwriter, because otherwise why would he have signed away the rights to all of his publishing, which is the only way that you make money as a songwriter. Also, look at this album cover. Does that look like a guy to you who doesn't want to be a rock star? Who's like, no, I shun the spotlight.
I see a very Cat Stevens look to him. He's got a porn stash. He is rocking some curls. He's got a black turtleneck, and he's just sort of hanging out on a rocky beach. You know that's uncomfortable to sit on. So I think he's really trying to look arty. Like,
Artie wanted him to look arty.
Artie wanted him to look arty. He's like, all right, this is your chance. This is your chance, kid. We're out of Attila. We're out of Attila. We want to show everybody how sensitive you are. How sensitive you are.
Yeah.
Working too hard can give you a heart attack. You ought to know by now. Who needs a house, a pack and sack? Is that all you get for your money?
It's time to talk about our first sponsor today, Princess Bakery in Massapequa, Long Island. Princess Bakery. We have those weird Italian cookies that nobody actually likes.
Yeah, they got them all. They've got the ones that taste like fennel.
Ooh, I hate that kind.
It's the one, like, it's like you want a cookie and it tastes like a sausage, right? So put fennel in it.
Exactly. And you know my favorite thing about those cookies is how they scrape up the top of your mouth.
Mm.
Oh, that's good.
And the next morning you want to eat your cereal and it's just it feels like your mouth has been to war or something.
It really has. And like maybe you have a Coke later. Although,
exactly.
Yeah. One of my favorite things as a kid was to have Captain Crunch and a Coke so you could have that, like, it was like a violent experience.
Jesus Christ. What kind of kid were you?
It was like somebody napalmed my mouth.
So they got the fennel cookies at Princess Bakery. They got the ones that have, like, they just squirt jam on top of them.
Yep.
And the jam gets all over the other cookies in the box.
Yep.
Yeah, they got those. Because, you know, what the Italians figured out a long time ago is that dessert shouldn't actually be good.
Right. They should, like, be awkward.
Yeah.
And last 5,000 years in a box on your Spencer Aunt's counter.
Yeah, the box is the key thing. Like, it's not sugar that makes a dessert. What makes a dessert is putting it into the white box that has the...
The string.
Yeah, the string tied around it. You put it in that, it's a dessert, okay?
If you bury it in the ground, it will never decompose.
That's right, exactly. A good dessert, Italian dessert, just should not have sugar. It should have, like, you know, clumpy cheese, you know,
the ricotta?
And nuts. And if there's any kind of pastry component, any kind of bread, it should be, like, really tough.
It really should.
And maybe soggy a little bit on the inside layer.
Yep. And old people are going to love it.
They're going to love it, exactly. A good Italian dessert is not about tasting good or being enjoyable.
It's awkward about, and painful.
It's about nostalgia, right? That's the only function that it serves.
Right.
Okay?
Yep.
So, Princess Bakery... Roxana, who runs the joint, I still remember from her first communion.
Oh, she's a good person. A good girl.
Good girl.
Such a good girl.
You know, go ahead and check them out at the South Bay Shopping Center, wherever they are, I guess. And we want to thank Princess Bakery for their support.
We took on Diesel back in Montauk yesterday and left this morning from the Bell and Garner's Bay. Like all the locals here, I've had to sell my home. Too proud to leave, I work my fingers to the bone so I could own my Downeaster Alexa.
So in the, I think it was 1983 remaster that they... that Artie did. And in fact, from what I read, Billy wasn't even in the room.
Yeah, he had nothing to do with it.
He had nothing to do with it. He was with Columbia at the time, but Artie did the remastering of this.
Cold Spring Harbor. I can't remember.
I honestly can't remember
one is right. Okay, Cold Spring Harbor.
And in doing that, they added these weird... Well, not just very 80s sounds. The drums were very 80s. The guitars were very 80s. And so you have this strange juxtaposition of, you know, this sort of earnest 1971 Billy Joel, just taking down a little bit enough to you notice it, but it's still not great. It still doesn't sound like Billy. And then you're going to layer on some, you know, 80s sounds, and it's kind of not going to be great.
Yeah. All right, let's listen. So this is, we're going to listen to Everybody Loves You Now, which is the other well-known song from this album. And this is from the original recording. So it's got all the original instrumental parts on it, but somebody on YouTube has tried to fix the pitch a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's still a little sharp, but anyway, so here's the original recording of Everybody Loves You Now from 1971.
Maybe all the lights are turned on you. Now you're in the center of the stage. Everything revolves on what you do. Ah, you are in your prime, you've come of age. And you can always have your way somehow. Cause everybody loves you now.
All right. Now, here is the version from the remastered album. And Artie has gotten a new drummer to go in and dub new drum parts. And I want you to pay attention to the drums in particular here.
Maybe all the lights are turned on you. Now you're in the center of the stage. Everything revolves on what you do.
Is that a hi-hat?
You are in your prime, you've come of age. And you can always have your way somehow. Cause everybody loves you now.
I love this. It's like... this drummer, you know, because there's nobody else in the studio. He's been brought in to dub parts over the original, and he's the only one there. And he's like, this is going to be a drum song now, okay?
this is my big break.
Billy Joel made an album, and they figured it needed something. It needed me. It needed me. Billy Joel needed me.
Hey, Ma, I got great news.
I'm going to play on a Billy Joel album. Oh, you're going to play with Billy Joel? Well, not really. I'm going to sit alone in a room and... play on top of Billy Joel from 10 years ago.
But they really need me to make it better.
They really need me. They need me. Me to make it better. So that whole drum part is just screaming, me, me, me.
This song is my big break. I'm going to make it.
Shall we listen to the song a little bit more and then we can talk about the song itself?
Yes, please, because I do love the song.
Your mistakes, you can turn your back on what you do. Just a little smile is all it takes. Yeah, and you can have your cake and eat it too. All loneliness will get to you somehow. But everybody loves you now. Ah, they all want your white body. And they await your reply. Ah, but between you and me and the Staten Island Ferry. So do I.
Who do we think he's singing to?
Oh, it's got to be the former Mrs. Smalls.
But she wasn't trying to be famous.
That's true.
So this is a song that's like...
It's like a...
What do you call it? It's a smarmy congratulations to someone who's gotten famous,
right? Right, right.
And pointing out how in your fame you have become shallow and you don't care about anybody's feelings anymore.
Right.
So is he talking... Joel writes in the second person a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of his songs are directed at an unnamed you,
right.
Generally a woman who he thinks is...
That
has wronged
being
him in some way.
Has been passive.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's being passive aggressive. He thinks that she's shallow and coquettish, and the misogyny of Joel is something we're going to have to talk about later. Okay. But anyways, so is he singing to some lady right now? He just said he wanted her body. Or is he singing to himself?
I don't think he's reached the height in his career that he would be singing to himself. I think that I wonder if he's just singing to fame itself.
He's personified fame. This is totally this album cover right here. That looks like a guy who'd be like, so what I've really done in this is I've tried to personify fame.
Right, exactly.
You know? Oh, here's my favorite part.
Everybody loves you now.
When he goes to halftime on that for the last chorus, I actually think that's really great. And I think it's an example of his classical training coming out, because there's this technique from like Baroque composition called a stretto.
Hmm.
It's just like Italian for stretch, and it's when you take your theme toward the end of the piece and you stretch it out in time. You make it kind of take longer because it just sort of sounds climactic.
Right.
That's what he's doing there with that last chorus. I honestly, like, I know I hate Billy Joel, but like I actually think that part's really good.
Well, then. It is, because Billy Joel is awesome, and I'm glad you're finally seeing the light.
With black curls like that.
Oh,
I mean,
so handsome.
That,
so
and that
handsome.
Porn stash.
Man,
jeez.
If I was a preteen girl in the 1970s.
Those sad eyes, those boxer's eyes.
I know. And he's on a beach and it's probably cold because he's wearing a turtleneck. God, he's experiencing nature.
So I initially took this song to be that he was singing to himself, that it was like, but, and which I thought was funny because he wasn't famous yet at this stage. So I took it to be like, you know, when rappers, like, on their debut album talk
I'm
about
the best
like
rapper in the world.
And they talk about like the burdens of fame and like and everybody wants my money now and stuff like that. And it's like, dude, as you're recording this song, you don't have any money. You're not famous yet.
Yeah.
Right? It's all aspirational. Mm-hmm. Right? So I kind of took that to be and it's like it's the white guy version of this because he has shame about his success, right? that's what I took this to be. But you're thinking that he's singing to somebody else.
So what got me with this album and with this song particularly is the idea that fame is an echo chamber and it's self-reinforcing. And you just start to look for things that agree with you and you don't really get out of your comfort zone. And that I think it's really – I think he's presaging this sort of fame.
Presaging his own fucking life.
Right.
I mean, because that's so what happens to him.
Right. And I think this is what makes him a really good songwriter is that he can project himself into the future and to other people.
A really good songwriter is going to come up with a line like, "So your life is only living anyhow."
But isn't that beautiful in its own way?
No, it's not. It
but your life is only living. Your life isn't experiencing. Your life isn't creating. It's about this. You keep doing the same loop because it's getting you somewhere. I mean, it's getting you somewhere, but it's actually getting you nowhere.
You sound like you are in like a high school poetry seminar junior year. Right? And you're
going to read just my slam poetry.
Right. And like you are and your friends are really excited because you're going to go to the coffee shop after school.
I'm going to wear a beret.
You're going to hang out at the coffee
I'm
shop
gonna wear a
by
beret.
Yourselves.
I'm going to wear a beret and it's going to be great. I'm going to work some haikus. Yep.
Stop defending this guy, would
you? Oh, no, I can't defend him enough. He's so good.
Once I thought my innocence was gone. Now I know that happiness goes on. That's where you found me when you put your arms around me. I haven't been there for the longest time.
And now it's time to acknowledge our second sponsor for the episode, Nikki's Muttontown Car Wash, located in Muttontown, Long Island. Nikki's, definitely not a money laundering operation.
Yeah, so you're going to need to bring cash if you go to Nikki's, but it's fine. It's fine. It's the cheapest car wash on the island.
Uh-huh.
It's going to cost you like $5.50 to get your whole car done. They vacuum it out.
Vacuum with for the $5.50?
$5.50, yeah,
okay,
yeah,
do they do wax at the end?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They can. I think that's going to cost you another $2.
Uh-huh.
I usually don't do the wax, though. I just, that's not, I don't like a shiny car.
You
I don't
like a shiny
it.
Car.
I like a matte finish.
Yeah. That's right. And then, you know, the dog scratches it, and then
the
you just got to go again.
It. Come on.
The dog scratches the car,
come
and then
on.
You got to go back.
You're going to get the salt from the sea. I mean, come on. But $5.50, I could do that. I could do that all day long. Bring cash.
Bring cash. You know, it's so unfair. Ever since Breaking Bad, everybody thinks that, like, car washes, they're always these, like, fronts for illegal activity, and it's just not. This is a stereotype, you know?
It really is.
It's really
Nikki
a stereotype.
Works hard.
Nikki worked. Look, I love Nikki. I remember her first communion like it was yesterday.
Great girl.
Great girl.
Girl, great girl.
She's a good girl.
Good girl.
Yeah.
Good girl.
Like a dog.
Like
I like
a dog.
A dog.
Like
cute
a dog.
Dog.
She's good like a dog. She's good like a dog. She's loyal. She can really catch a ball.
Nikki's Muttontown Car Wash. We thank you for your support.
Shout out to Muttontown. What? Go Beards, Mutton Chop Beards. That's the high school.
Is there really a town on Long Island that's named after
town?
The meat of an adult sheep?
It's the sun in your lady of memory. I'm not really sure how it goes. But it's sad and it's sweet and I know it's complete when I wore a younger man's clothes.
All right, Meg, so we talked about the two famous songs from this album.
Yes.
Should we explore any of the deep cuts?
Yes, please. There is a song that even me, who self-identifies as a Billy Joel superfan, thinks is a little silly.
Which one is this?
This would be Why, Judy? Why? after I heard what, this
Judy?
Song.
Why?
Why, Judy? Why?
All right, here we go.
All right, let's listen to it, and then I've got thoughts. I have thoughts.
Of all the people in the world that I know, you're the best place to go when I cry, when I cry.
So sensitive.
I never asked for much before, not before. Things are changed, I need more. Tell me why, Judy, why?
Is there a chorus at some point here?
I think why, Judy, why is the chorus.
Lots of humming. Joel loves to hum.
I never thought that she would say goodbye, but she did, and now I wanna die. I wanna die.
I mean,
wanna die.
I wanna die.
You have thoughts about this?
I have thoughts about this.
Okay.
You know what's bad when you, for the first time you hear a song, you break in with joke lyrics. So I was just like, bye, Judy. Bye.
Bye.
Watch. And why would he pick Judy? That's like the most prosaic name in the world. Judy. Come on, Judy.
Well, so this record has sort of, a late 60s folky kind of thing.
Yeah.
Judy Collins maybe was his muse on this.
Come on, Judy Collins. You're my place I go when I cry. Just
first of all, she's a human, not a place, okay? You're really going to reduce, again, the misogyny of Joel, going to reduce a woman to an inanimate object that you can...
Judy's a whole experience. Mm. She is a person, a place.
A thing.
A mineral. Yeah. All, many, many nouns. You can also to Judy, which makes her a transitive verb.
Ooh, classical guitar solo.
Yeah.
No piano on this at all.
No piano on this at all.
I don't think he's playing any of the guitar parts.
I was thinking about that. I imagined him in that. I spent a lot of time thinking about the song. I imagined him like in a coffee house wearing that Billy Joel black turtleneck, playing the guitar and just being real earnest about it.
I don't think he plays the guitar this well, because as we will see later, he likes to this day in his live concerts when he plays We Didn't Start the Fire, he gets up and he straps on a big old Gibson Les Paul that like makes him look so small. And he plays and he kind of like, he does that thing where like, you know, he looks down at the neck of the guitar long enough to just find one chord, and then he just looks up and just leaves the hand there the whole time, right? And he just kind of goes zoom, ring, ring, yeah, the whole time. So I think that was a session guy that we heard there.
And I imagine him writing the lyrics to this and thinking, yeah, no, I nailed it. This is great.
Someone's totally going to want to buy this song from me, because I'm not trying to be a singer-songwriter.
I'm not.
I just want to be a Brill Building kind of guy, you
right?
know?
You know?
Which is why I sold away the rights to 10 years worth of songs so that I would make money. I don't know how.
Artie Fripp will take care of me.
Yeah, Artie will take care. Yeah. Artie says he's going to take care of me.
Artie said not to worry about it.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Rick China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winston, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe!
4-bar break. Yeah. Get another drink. All right, we got to update our Joel Power rankings. As dedicated listeners to all two episodes of the show so far know, we are going to keep a running tally of Billy Joel albums from best to worst as we go through this entire project. And our power rankings as they stand are number one. I mean, this is where we're at here, okay? Number one is Attila. That's the right at the moment, that's the best Billy Joel album.
That's a good album.
Okay. Followed by The Hassle, self-titled debut at number two, and then Hour of the Wolf is three from The Hassles as well. So what's going to happen here? Is Cold Stone Harbor going to dethrone any of these?
No. I still think Attila's number one.
Okay.
I still think Attila's number one. Dang. I think
you're saying the Attila album is better than Cold Spring Harbor.
I do. I do, because I think it shows that he was trying to innovate, that he was trying to be reflective of what was going on in the world and in music doing that.
And oddly, he sounded like more of a man on that album.
And the album cover, he was standing around meat.
Meat.
I mean, yeah. He took a lot of risks on that album.
Meat is better than porn stashes, I'd say.
Than the soulful eyes.
Yeah.
So I would say that it should go Attila, Cold Stone Creamery, then The Hassles, then Hour of the Wolf.
Okay. All right, we're putting Cold Stone Harbor in at number 2 on the Jewel Power Rankings. We'll see how it fares as we go. All right, Meg, what do we have coming up next on the next episode?
We have his breakout album, Piano Man.
Piano Man, featuring Piano Man. The song of the same name.
Yes.
And I assume there are some other songs
on
that album.
Joel heads, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Wow! Play Piano Man!
I'm not with her.
It's so good. It's my favorite jam.
All right. Hit us with some Billy Words of Wisdom.
All right. So Billy's Words of Wisdom this week. Everybody loves you now. Close your eyes when you don't want to see.
Close them.
Stay at home when you don't want to go.
Just stay there. Stay at home with Captain Jack.
Only speak to those who will agree.
Like Christy?
Yeah. And close your mind when you don't want to know. You've lost your innocence somehow. But everybody loves you now.
And I love you too, Meg.
Love you too, Adam.
And we love you, dear listener. This has been We Didn't Start the Podcast. I'm Adam Ragusea. I don't really like Billy Joel.
I'm Meg Donahue, and I really do. Goodbye. Bye, Judy. Bye.
If you want to tell us about everything that we got wrong or everything we're stupid about, you can talk to us on Twitter using the hashtag Joelhole, Joelhole.
If you want to find us on Twitter, Adam is at A Ragusea. That's A-R-A-G-U-S-E-A. I'm Meg, and I am at Donahue Meg. That's D-O-N-A-H-U-E-M-E-G.
This podcast is it's just something that we're doing for fun.
Funsies.
We are not representing our employer in any respect.
Ew.
We are not making money from this. Please don't sue us. There is no money to be had, and you'd have no grounds to sue us anyway because we're exercising our fair use rights here.
Well, I mean, do you want to kick a dog when they're down? I mean, is that how you want to live your life?
We're dogs and we're down? I was feeling pretty good today. Jesus.
Can't get blood from a turnip. Yeah. Yeah, so some of our sponsors are real businesses, but they're not really actually our sponsors. It's a joke,
it's a
dummy.
Dummy. Stupid.
Idiots.
Ugh.
Alienate the listeners.
It's the key.